Welcome! The chase for European competition is on in the Bundesliga, but maybe not the way you'd expect. Hoffenheim won their third straight game on Friday. Are they finally going to make their Champions League debut? Hamburg topped Wolfsburg in a relegation six-pointer. Can they come up with another great escape? And we discuss the turmoil at RB Leipzig in our Shot from Rosette section. How much trouble are they in? This is Tribuna Weekly. Davis van Opdorp here with Matt Ford. Matt, take us to the match day.
German Federal League Division 1, match day 32. Gymnastics and Sports Society 1899 Hoffenheim 3, Hanoverian Sport Club of 1896 1. Football Club Bavaria Munich 4, Sports Community Frankfurt United 1, Hertha Berlin Sport Club 2, Football Club Augsburg 2. Sport Club Freiburg, 3. The First Football Club of Cologne, 2. Football Club Schalke 04, 1. Club for Physical Exercise Prussia Mönchengladbach, 1. Club for Physical Exercise Wolfsburg Football, 1. Hamburger Sport Club, 3. Bayer 04 Leverkusen Football, 0. Club for Agility Games Stuttgart, 1. The First Football Club of Mainz 05, 3. Lawn Ball Sport Leipzig, 0. Sport Club Werder Bremen, 1. Ball Games Club Prussia 09 Dortmund, 1.
So Matt, for the first time since match day 9, Hoffenheim are in the top 4 of the Bundesliga table. Now granted that came with draws or losses by every other team around them, but still, they won their third game in a row. They are unbeaten in their last 5 games as well. And now Julian Nagelsmann could have another chance to get back to the Champions League. Now, this game was not without... Their game against Hanover was not without its bad news, because Serge Gnabry and Karim Demirbay both left throughout the game with various injuries. It looks like Serge Gnabry has a muscular strain, which could also eliminate him from World Cup selection. But what did you think of the game in general? Because I mean, Hoffenheim are playing at a level that we haven't seen in since the beginning of the season, or maybe even last season.
Yeah, they're playing at a level which we haven't seen since before they were in the Europa League, and I don't think that's a coincidence at all. It is an incredible run that they're on, not just unbeaten in 5, but they've only lost 1 in their last 12. It's an incredible run, and now, as of this weekend, they're the second highest scorers in the Bundesliga, with 63 goals altogether this season. A hugely potent and dangerous attacking lineup around Marc Uth, Serge Gnabry, and this weekend in particular, Andrej Kramaric, with an outstanding hat-trick. If anyone gets the chance to have a look at the highlights of that, it's certainly recommended, especially the second and the third goal. The second was a fantastic volley, and the third was a nice lob over the goalkeeper. But yeah, as I said, it's not a coincidence that this return to form has come at a time when they've no longer had this European distraction to deal with.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because obviously they were in the group stages of the Europa League after losing to Liverpool in the Champions League qualifier. And do you attribute their struggles in the beginning of the season just to that, or do you think there was something else of Nagelsmann basically trying to work without his best players?
And we said before the season that Hoffenheim might struggle, having lost the spine of the team. Obviously, Niklas Süle left, Sebastian Rudi left, and then halfway through the season, Sandro Wagner followed them both to Bayern Munich as well. And of course, there were also rumours surrounding Julian Nagelsmann's future. He was linked with the Dortmund job. We had that jokey moment when he was at the Dortmund away game, where he said to Peter Stöger said to him, "Oh, make sure you sit on the right bench." Because the rumours were still swirling then, but that's been sorted out. He said that he's 100% staying until the end of his contract in 2019 at the very least.
To qualify that, I mean, he has a buyout clause, yeah. And in 2019, his contract, I believe, goes into 2022 or 2021. But
yeah, that might be the case, yeah. Does it come down to the European distraction? I think, yes, it does, because that has a knock-on effect on various other aspects. I think the first thing to say is that after those six group stage Europa League games that they played, Hoffenheim only won one of the Bundesliga games which followed. So that was including away trips as well. So that obviously had an effect on them. I always say that you should never underestimate not just the physical strain, but also the mental strain of a team having to play midweek weekend for the first time. It is a different rhythm. And then from a purely physical and training and preparation and tactical point of view, Nagelsmann said himself that effectively for 6 months they weren't, as far as he was concerned, they weren't able to train properly, because all the training sessions that they had between Thursday and Sunday games, he said, were purely based on regeneration and being physically ready to play again on the Sunday or the Monday or however it might have been. And that posed a particular problem for Hoffenheim and Julian Nagelsmann, given that, as we know, how intense and well thought through and how meticulous his training sessions are.
Well, not only that, too. I mean, that is a terrific point, by the way. Not only that, but also Hoffenheim as a club they're one of their biggest calling cards is player development and basically having the best technology available to develop the next generation of German footballers. Hoffenheim did not have time to do that in the group stages because, like you said, they were basically prepared either using training sessions to regenerate or prepare for their upcoming match. I think that's a terrific point that you just made.
Yeah, and of course the other one, it's not just a case of them not having the time to go about putting these meticulous plans into place on the practice field. We also have the issue of new players in the squad and new signings, and I'm thinking particularly Florian Grillitsch as an example, Nico Schulz came as well. Not being able to integrate properly. I mean, work on the training pitch, getting to know your new teammates, working with them day in, day out. Obviously, that suffered for the first half of the season with new players coming in, trying to replace the spine of the team, which, as we said, was bought away by Bayern Munich. But they didn't have the chance to do that because, by necessity, the focus was purely on physical regeneration and not getting those automatic reactions and not getting that match day and that match day rhythm working properly, and that clearly had an effect. And we've seen since that's not been the case anymore, we've seen Hoffenheim come into their own again, playing the sort of football which took them into the Champions League in the first place last season, and which makes it even more incredible because they've done it having lost the spine of their team. And as we said, Marc Uth, Serge Gnabry and Andre Kramaric and Kevin Demirbay behind them have been particular standouts.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that. I mean, the losses that they had, because of course, Serge Gnabry is on loan from Bayern Munich. He said in the middle of the season that he plans to go back to Bayern Munich as planned. And also the fact that Marc Uth also signed a pre-contract with Schalke, who's also going to be in the Champions League. So no matter what, Marc Uth is going to be playing Champions League football next season, it appears.
I think that's totally deserved as well.
Basically my question is, what if Hoffenheim qualify for the Champions League again this season?
And of course, fourth place is direct this year.
They won't have to
qualify.
But how do they... Do you think that it will be different, this group stage coming up, wherever it is, it's going to be different this time around, or do you expect them to struggle again next season? Have you seen anything basically from the way that they're performing lately to suggest that they could that this is more than just an open, basically a more open fixture list that they don't have to worry about another competition anymore?
I still think ultimately Hoffenheim are likely to get found out in the Champions League, just as they did in the Europa League group stage as well. Obviously, they were of course unfortunate that they came up against a team like Liverpool in the qualification round last year, a team which under Jurgen Klopp plays a very similar style of football to what Julian Nagelsmann is trying to develop at Hoffenheim, but much more developed, much further forward in their development. And like I said, I think they would come up against similar issues in the Champions League this year. The squad still isn't huge, and I still think there will be issues. working out that balance. The only difference would be that rather than playing Thursday to Sunday, they'd be playing Tuesday or Wednesday to Friday or Saturday. So I can't see a huge difference being made there. They're going to miss Serge Gnabry absolutely hugely, a player of genuine Champions League potential, who they'll miss next year. On the other hand, as good as Mark Oud and Andrew Kramaric have been, as much as they deserve their chance at the highest level, remains to be seen whether they actually are Champions League standard players.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Andrew Kramaric is a really interesting case because at the end of last season, he had a similar run to this. I think he's scoring more than he did at the end of last season, but he was a very key piece, and not only just as a center forward, but he also he basically played wherever Julian Nagelsmann wanted him to play. He assimilated very well with playing with Sandro Wagner and Adam Colai, who are two players who are considered lone out and out strikers, and he was able to assimilate with Nagelsmann playing and with three strikers, with Kramaric playing with those two players. Basically, my question is, he may be the centerpiece of Hoffenheim's teams next year. Are you convinced now with his form that he could be that centerpiece player that Hoffenheim could rely on?
I'm not sure if I can say it, whether I'm personally convinced, but I'm certainly interested to see him have a go at it. Over the past two seasons, we've seen him play various roles, whether it was in more of a supporting role for a number nine in Sandro Wagner last season, or in a much more varied role this season as part of a more varied and flexible front three. He scored 12 goals now, 7 assists on top of that, a great eye for goal, fantastic shot on him, works hard. Yeah, I'm convinced that he deserves his chance to prove that he can do it at the highest level. And we'll see. Certainly be interesting.
Now, we asked this question about Frankfurt, and I'm curious what the answer is with Hoffenheim. I asked a few weeks ago which competition would be better for Frankfurt to play in if they do make a European competition. That's not as slam dunk as it was before, but so for Hoffenheim, is it better for them to be in the Champions League? Or is it better for them to spend maybe another year in the Europa League playing, maybe even playing competition that they would be able to match or be better than rather than the Champions League?
I think the comparison with Frankfurt is a little bit wider.
So I wasn't trying to compare the two teams.
I know what you mean, but I just think I know it's not a direct comparison, but it's all about the perspectives, and we've touched on this issue of perspective before in terms of what a club actually wants and what it wants to be. The perspectives at Hoffenheim would be, on the one hand, what does Dietmar Hopp want from this construct that he's created? Does he want a Champions League team, or is he happy with just having Bundesliga football in his region? I don't know. In that case, I would suggest that, in terms of their development, perhaps Europa League would be a better stepping stone. Another perspective would be that of Julian Nagelsmann. What does he want to be as a coach? And I think from that perspective, he certainly needs a chance now to prove himself in the Champions League. He's no longer a completely new coach in the Bundesliga. His tactics and his style of play and the way he works with the technology at his disposal and his meticulous planning, the way he works with his players, being not that much older than himself anyway, he's shown that works in the Bundesliga. As far as I was concerned, he did fail that chance to convince in the Europa League last year. That was a group that Hoffenheim should have been getting out with the quality that they have in the squad and the quality of manager that Julian Nagelsmann is. We all expect great things from him. We all want to see Julian Nagelsmann do well. So it's a great opportunity for him to coach in the Champions League. As for the players, from their perspective, they would see the Champions League not as a chance to build on what Hoffenheim have built, but to put themselves in the shop window for a move to a bigger club.
All right, Matt, so believe it or not, Hamburg are still alive in the Bundesliga. I wrote them off a few weeks ago. I think you were really close to writing them off. I don't know if you quite wrote them off, but after a tremendous 6-point victory, in a sense, over a 3-1 victory over Wolfsburg. They are now just 2 points behind that 16th relegation playoff spot, which is just absolutely unfathomable. It's their third victory in 4 matches, and it's unbelievable that we're still talking about this team staying in the Bundesliga, considering where they were when Bernd Hollerbach was fired. What are your impressions? I mean, we talked a little bit about Hamburg last week, but what are your impressions of this team now and in these last 2 games of the season?
I think it's important not to get carried away with Hamburg yet, because like you said, they are still 2 points off that relegation playoff spot. And they've done everything they can do so far. Now it is technically out of their hands. We said 2 weeks ago that they have 2 finals, 2 6-pointers to come against direct relegation rivals, Freiburg at home and then Wolfsburg away. They absolutely 100% had to win both. There was no other option, and they have done. So now they move on to Frankfurt away next week. And it's a game which I don't think they have to win it. However, of course, that would help them massively. What they mustn't do is lose. Technically, it's out of their hands. However, when you consider that their direct rivals now, Wolfsburg, have to go away to Red Bull, mm-hmm. Which despite their downturn in form, which we'll discuss shortly, remains a tough place to go, and I struggle to see them getting a result there. I really do. And on the other hand, Eintracht Frankfurt have also had a bit of a collapse in form, which suggests that Hamburg will go into that game believing that they can get at least a point out of that. Still a lot to play for, but so much has changed since Christian Titz took over. He took over a team which was dead. And if they do manage to escape this, and it's still a big if, it would be the most miraculous escape yet. But yeah, there are good reasons for it.
Yeah, so let's we were talking about before we started recording that, I mean, this is for all of these survival attempts by Hamburg, for me personally, this is the one I can buy into, I think, the most. And
it's incredible, given that this is the biggest distance they've come from.
Right, and it's not just because of that, though. To me, I mean, they still had this. Of course, this season they still had this coaching carousel that I expect to continue next season, considering that they haven't 100% fully committed to Christian Titz, and Christian Titz also is after working with the reserves for so many years, he is also wants a head coaching job if. Not at Hamburg, then at somewhere else. But, I mean, the fact that, maybe it's the fact that Bernd Hoffmann is back. Bernd Hoffmann was the chairman for many years in Hamburg's most successful years. He made them their most, the second most profitable club behind Bayern Munich. And that was also in the time when Borussia Dortmund was really struggling financially in the late 2000s. And he has come back as the president of the club, and he's put in his own chairman and his own sporting director. Maybe it's because of that, or maybe it's just because of the young players that they've brought through. And this is something that you wrote about. So why don't you talk about what do you think that these young players have provided this Hamburg team in this relegation fight?
Well, they're fearless. You're right. I wrote a piece over the weekend, basically suggesting that these changes at Hamburg, both on and off the pitch, are long, long, long overdue. They've been necessary for years, and they are finally taking place, probably and arguably too late. But that led me to think that really, in that great scheme of things, given the timescale when Bernd Hoffmann took over not just as club president, but also as the head of the supervisory board as well, immediately dismissing the sporting director Jens Tote and Herbert Brookhagen as well, closely followed by the coach Bernd Hollerbach as well, and bringing in Christian Titz. These were decisions which were all made with Division 2 in mind. Hamburg were dead. I think the belief was even there in the club that there was no way back from this time. The belief had gone in the stands as well. The fans tried to storm the pitch after it was at the Hertha Berlin home game or the one before that.
And by the way, has not sold alcohol in the Volkswagen Stadium since then. And I mentioned this last week. I was at the game against Freiburg, and they were actually the there was also police officers that came in front of the. Of the Nordtribüne, which is where the fan section is, just to make sure that that storming the pitch like it that happened in the derby, in the North derby, doesn't happen again.
Yeah, it was all the club was considered on its knees, and it became a thing that I said in the piece that if in a way it's almost irrelevant now whether Hamburg go down or not, or at least it was before this weekend. It's almost irrelevant. These changes had to take place, and these changes were taking place, and I think that you're already seeing the effect. I think it's already paying dividends. Whether that will ultimately be enough to keep them up is, I think, at this point, still slightly irrelevant. It showed that it does work, that something new can exist at Hamburg. That club has been plagued for almost a decade now by a poisonous culture and identity, which revolves solely around this club being the Bundesliga dinosaur, the one club which had never ever been relegated since the Bundesliga came into existence in 1963. But whenever they've achieved that, and no matter how dramatic the circumstances have been, or how they've saved themselves by the skin of their teeth. That's as far as it has ever gone, and that's as far as it can ever go in this current setup. So something has to change, and they've started doing that. Whether those changes take them into the second division or allow them a restart in the first division, it is irrelevant. The changes simply have to happen, and they are. On the pitch, those changes have been carried out by Christian Titz, and he deserves huge, huge credit. He's had the guts to come in and take big names, established names out of the squad. He quite famously upset Kyriakos Papadopoulos for the game against Hertha Berlin when he took him out of the squad, and Papadopoulos responded to that by saying, "Oh, it's not the right solution. We're the experienced players who have saved Hamburg on so many occasions. You need us in this situation." Well, he forgot to mention that, yeah, those experienced players also got Hamburg into that situation year after year after year. So no wonder he was dropped. But the lads he's brought in from that reserve team have come in and they've been absolutely fearless. And it's no surprise, it's no coincidence, but they have a culture of winning. That Hamburg reserve team were top of their league up until about 6 weeks ago, when half of them were drafted into the first team. They're no longer top, but they have a culture of winning. And the standout players have been the captain, Matti Steinmann, who's nailed himself into that defensive midfield role, a hugely important role, and he's made it his own.
Yeah. They just haven't had a six like him.
Not
either.
Really, no. I mean, I think Gideon Jung has not done a bad job, but he's been pressed.
But he's
more
not
more
really
into,
that kind of no, defensive midfielder, though.
I think he's found a better position for himself in
centre back.
Tatsuya Ito, for me, has been a standout all season. I love watching him. I think he's exciting when he plays, and it showed again at the weekend that it was his dribble into the box which led to the penalty, the first penalty, and it was his pinpoint cross which led to Lewis Holtby's header, which made it 2-0. Luka Waldschmidt is another name who's come from the under-21s, scored a vital goal last season on the final day of the season when Hamburg beat Wolfsburg 2-1, and scored again at the weekend this time. These players aren't burdened by it, and I think there were some key quotes which came out. I think Christian Titz told the media that he got the players together when he took over and asked them, said, right, what sort of atmosphere, what sort of mentality do we want in this dressing room? How do we want to work together, live together, and get out of this? And if a player hasn't got the right attitude to deal with that, then there can be no place for him in the squad. The young lads have come in, aren't burdened with that. And Lewis Holtby's been one of the older players who I think has benefited from this change in climate, this change in attitude. He's now scored 4 goals in the past 5 games.
Well, so let's talk about Lewis Holtby, because his situation is actually a little bit more complex than him just scoring goals in the relegation fight, because he is out of contract at the end of the season. He's one of the 8 players that will be out of contract at the end of the season. Now, I think he's in the form of his life. I've never seen him play this well before. Even a few years ago when he was playing under Bruno Labbadia, I think he's playing better now than he did then a couple years ago. But he's out of contract at the end of the season, and there have been Some in the German media have said it would be a complete mistake to extend, give him a contract, extend his contract just because he's making this relegation race more exciting.
That's the argument that's been leveled at a lot of those departing players from Hamburg, and I think that's true for a lot of them. However, there are worse culprits than Lewis Holtby for me.
And I don't think that you can necessarily put all of Hamburg's struggles down to Lewis Holtby. I don't think that Lewis Holtby...
No, I think it's completely wrong to do.
Right, exactly. And I think that if you were to keep one player of the eight players that are out of contract, and that includes also Kotoku Sakai and
Aaron Hunt,
and Heronen and some
Müller,
others.
Sven Shiplock, they all need to go. I would even have added...
Well, Wallace still is under contract. He is a player rumored to go, but he is not one in that group.
I would even have added Bobby Wood to that. However, I thought it said a lot that he had the confidence at which he's running through that team at the moment is obviously rubbed off on Bobby Wood as well, because when that penalty was given, it wasn't in form Lewis Holtby or Aaron Hunt or an experienced player who stepped up. It was Wood, Bobby Wood, who snatched the ball and said, "No, I'll take it." And he put the ball away as if he'd been scoring goals every week.
But so,
clearly, confidence going through the team.
So do you think that Lewis Holtby now is not just based on his form? Do you think that Holtby is a player that Hamburg cannot afford to lose of that group of eight players out of contract?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think he's certainly one that I would keep. The only issue in the way probably is wages. I'm not sure what sort of financial
right.
They want to go through there. I think he's on about 3 or 3.5 million euros a year, which is a lot for a club reliant on the money of one rich fan. But he's enjoying his football again. He's clearly having fun on the pitch. He's clearly benefiting from the style of football which Christian Titz has got them playing, a much more possession based game. He said after the game against Wolfsburg that we're playing football again for the first time in years. They're enjoying having possession. They're enjoying creating chances. They're enjoying scoring goals. Holtby said, and it was a great quote. He said, "When the ball's your friend, it makes the game a lot easier." And it certainly looks like that with the way they're playing, and it's down to Christian Titz and the way that he's come in and done that. Perhaps the situation wouldn't even have been possible. Had they not sunk so low,
yeah, true.
In the first place,
because
they really well have nothing else to lose.
All right, so they go to Frankfurt next week, a game that you are going to be at, which I'm super super jealous.
We'll get a good podcast out of that.
Yeah.
One.
So yeah, we'll see if we can get something from the stadium from that. But also, they on the final day of the season they will be hosting Borussia Mönchengladbach. At this moment, right now, we've talked a lot about like. Of course, our relegation predictions and stuff. You can go back into the pod and criticize us later for all of our wrong predictions that we made. But what percent chance do you now give Hamburg that they are going to survive in the Bundesliga?
Well, what chance are they going to make it into that playoff? I don't think they can...
No, I mean survive. I mean fully survive. I mean make it to the playoff and beat likely Holstein Kiel in that relegation.
Okay, well, given that the opponent is likely to be Holstein Kiel... at the moment, yeah.
What percentage? Give me a percentage.
Over 50%. I'm not sure what predictions I've made in recent weeks. Can't remember, but I am now fully sat here with my Hamburg hat on, blue flag. Yeah. I'm well behind them.
I mean, you mentioned that they're 2 points behind Wolfsburg, so I think we can't really go that much farther ahead of 50%. But considering how far away they were from the relegation survival a few weeks ago. If you were to tell Hamburg fans back then that they still had a 50% chance of surviving, they would have taken that.
Yeah, there's still a long way to go, but I mean, like we said, it's technically it's out of their hands. But given the fixture constellation and how it's come together, like I said, Wolfsburg traveling to Red Bull, where I would expect them to lose despite Red Bull's current issues, and Frankfurt travelling to Hamburg travelling to a Frankfurt team who have also lost, I think, 4 of the last 5. They even shipped 3 goals at home to Hertha Berlin.
Lost to basically a Bayern team that was filled with...
Lost to Bayern's reserves.
Yeah.
All semblance of togetherness or sort of team mentality seems to have deserted that team at the moment since the news about Niko Kovac came out. Yeah, Hamburg are going to travel there with the fans behind them, and will certainly fancy themselves to get at least a point there, which will take it down to the final day. And Borussia Mönchengladbach at home, by which point it could be the case that Mönchengladbach have got nothing more to play for by that point. It depends how their games go. Yeah, I wouldn't write them off. And like I said, their direct competitors now, Wolfsburg, who have they got on the final day? Cologne at home.
Yep.
Cologne got nothing more to play for, so who knows what effect that'll have when they go there. But it won't be easy for Wolfsburg, and they're looking so poor, and the team seems to be falling apart. The fans were absolutely furious after the defeat at the weekend. They sacked the sporting director Olaf Reber even before kickoff. There seems to be absolute chaos at Wolfsburg at the moment, and I think a nice way to sort of end this segment might be actually, it was quite ironic and even quite mean, I thought, that the Hamburg fans in the corner were serenading Bruno Labbadia with chants, the same chants which they were singing 2 years ago in Karlsruhe when he saved them. Mm-hmm. They were singing his name, chanting, oh, Bruno Labbadia.
Mm-hmm.
And this time they were singing the same song at him as he took Wolfsburg into even more trouble. I thought that was a bit mean, but it says a lot about the situation of the two teams.
So speaking of the relegation fight, Mainz got a huge victory towards their survival, as did Freiburg. But the team on the end of Mainz's victory was RB Leipzig, who have now lost four of their last five games. The one game that they didn't lose was only a draw, so that was 1 point in their last five games. And now Ralf Hasenhüttl, which a few weeks ago we were talking about maybe Bayern Munich or Borussia Dortmund ponying up 10 million euros to try to poach him away from RB Leipzig. There has been reports in Germany that he might be sacked by RB Leipzig at the end of the season. So they are now still in sixth place behind Hoffenheim, but Frankfurt are right behind them, and they could basically knock them out of the Europe. That sixth Europa League spot, and they may qualify anyways because Frankfurt's in the cup final. But their Champions League hopes, which is more important to them probably, are getting dimmer and dimmer by the day. Matt, what do you make of this situation at Leipzig? And do you think that Ralf Hasenhüttl is really in trouble of losing his job at Leipzig?
I think it's by no means certain that he'll be staying there next season. There's an interesting starting point and a starting comparison to this, I think, in that a couple of weeks ago, obviously, they played Hoffenheim and were beaten 5-2. And it was in the build up to that game that both coaches were talking about the effect of these European campaigns. We talked before about Hoffenheim and the effect that Europa League had on them. RB were in Europe for longer, first of all in the Champions League and then going to the quarterfinals of the Europa League. And Ralf Hasenhüttl came up with similar comments. He said that, oh yeah, this is great in the build-up to this game. We've been able to train for the first time properly since February. And he quoted similar issues to those that Julian Nagelsmann have been mentioned. But whereas the absence of that commitment has clearly had a positive effect on Hoffenheim, it's certainly not had any effect on RB. And that came to a head in Mainz, where they did have a couple of chances to take the lead. Timo Werner had a shot cleared off the line, and arguably the penalty decision, which was awarded to Mainz, the contact on the foul
may have been a bit soft. Yoshinori Mutu may have gone down
a little.
Yeah, and that too.
The contact was outside the box. I'm not sure where the video referee was on that occasion. But yeah, significant issues been building up at Red Bull, especially in the second half of the season. The biggest one in that there is the amount of goals they're conceding. Only two Bundesliga teams have conceded more goals than Red Bull this season, and that's relegated Cologne and struggling Freiburg. And then obviously in the last five games, they've lost four out of five with a combined score of 18-6, including the 5-2 away defeat to Marseille in the Europa League. So that's not the sort of statistic that's going to take you far. We've praised them on so many occasions for the attacking potency that they have. We all know how dangerous the likes of Bruma and Agustin and Werner and Forsberg can be going forward, and they are great to watch. But at the back they've got significant issues. One of them is certainly from set pieces. We've seen them concede so many goals from set pieces. And that's led to lots of personnel questions at Red Bull, from the coach to major players and also to backroom staff.
Well, especially with the injury to Marcel Halstenberg. I mean,
that's been a huge loss, yeah. A lot of responsibilities fallen on Upamecano's shoulders, a young lad who impresses on occasion, but also, as we saw,
the
tackle on Muto can sometimes
let
his emotions get the better of him and dive in too quickly. I think that feeds into another issue which I've noticed at Red Bull the second half of the season especially, and that's discipline. They've had the joint most red cards this season, with 6 red cards. Only Wolfsburg have had as many.
Naby Keita sent off at
them,
the...
Three of them have been awarded to Naby Keita.
Sent off at the weekend.
Sent off again at the weekend. And for not just for fouls, for a petulant kick. He kicked out at a ninth player. There's absolutely no need to do it. And he's now finding himself, he's now suspended for the game against Wolfsburg next week, as is captain Willy Orban, who picked up his fifth yellow card. Discipline's a huge issue. We've mentioned Naby Keita on the podcast before, obviously because we're wondering what sort of player Liverpool are going to be getting next season, and whether this lack of discipline is linked to the fact that his mind is no longer really on the job at Red Bull, because his mind's already
well,
Liverpool.
Let me ask you about that.
We can argue that.
Let me ask you about that, because there was a report that was, I don't think, was talked about enough in Sport Bild. I mean, I think we sometimes exaggerate Sport Bild reports, but there was one with quotes with Ralph Hasenhüttl and from Kevin Campbell, who has been in the Red Bull system for a long time, played at Salzburg before moving to Leverkusen, or moving to Dortmund, excuse me, and then Leverkusen. And back now with the Red Bull family in Leipzig, but basically Campbell said a few weeks ago that a lot of the people in the dressing room are, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but a lot of people in the dressing room are more concerned about either their next contract or basically where their careers are going to go rather than actually Leipzig winning. And then you also have Ralf Hasenhüttl saying specifically about Timo Werner that he's a type of player that if Leipzig are ahead 4-0 and he wasn't a part of any of them, then he's still not a happy player. And didn't it from the context that it was, the quote was framed, it didn't sound like that was a competitiveness thing, but rather a petty, I didn't get to score a goal to basically increase my chances, to increase my goal total for the entire season. So what do you think the effect, do you think that there is an effect of it from the dressing room and basically the attitude that these players have to the rest of the season, especially now that they don't really, now that they're out of the Europa League, they don't have a trophy to play for?
I think, as we said, that there are personnel and personality issues at Red Bull. Timo Werner, I'm not too sure. He's a great goal scorer, and sometimes I like to attribute that sort of selfish streak to something that all top goal scorers have. So I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing to take away from him, to have a top striker who desperately wants to score goals all the time. I think they have to be selfish. But we've seen other issues cropping up. We've discussed Naby Keita, obviously. I don't think he's been a good influence on the dressing room this season. Especially making it quite clear over the winter that he'd actually have preferred to go to Liverpool sooner rather than later. Similar issues have been swirling around Emil Forsberg, who I think he tweeted, was it ahead of the game on Saturday or on Sunday, thanks for everything.
Yeah.
Which suggests that's come to an end as well. Obviously, there's been quite a lot of rumours over the past year or so about links to AC Milan.
AC Milan, yeah. He even while he was on duty with Sweden, he was even talking about these rumours fully bluntly, saying that the Milan is the place that he wants to go in his future.
Yeah, which begs the question again, are these players playing for a Red Bull team, no matter where it might be based, out of any sense of loyalty or desire to play for that club? I think you can argue, in certainly some cases, no, because what is there to play for? Others, I don't know, perhaps they might feel they owe that system something for the way they might have been for the way they've been scouted and brought through the academy system they have there. And then the personality issue or the personnel issues go all the way up to the top. Ralf Hasenhüttl's future at the club still isn't sorted. He allegedly met with Freddie Bobic in the week directly after returning from.
That's crazy that you consider that he could be in line to replace Niko Kovac Frankfurt Kovac went to Bayern Munich instead of Ralf Hasenhüttl. But I wanted to ask because this could be a real identity crisis for because when Red Bull came up, they didn't really. It took them actually a few years to get from. I mean, they didn't just soar up the Bundesliga. They didn't just get promotion after promotion after promotion. They were in the second Bundesliga for a few years, and it wasn't until they got to the Bundesliga and hired Ralf Hasenhüttl that they played this really exciting style of football, and they basically and became a kind of like an attacking machine. And you wonder if Ralf Hasenhüttl leaves, what happens to this basically this attack and identity, and what happens to the players that they recruited to kind of be in this attacking system?
I think you can massively overstate that, and I think you have overstated that actually. I think that attacking identity, that attacking philosophy that they have, is more attributable to Ralf Rangnick than to Ralf Hasenhüttl. And I think one of the reasons why,
but this kind of—I mean, this kind of really quick, really, really fast players getting the ball up quickly.
I attribute that to Ralf Rangnick more than to Ralf Hasenhüttl.
Really?
Yeah, certainly. I think even
because when I watched them play in the second Bundesliga, they were not playing as quickly as they were under Ralf Hasenhüttl.
No, it definitely comes from Rangnick. Hasenhüttl himself, I think, has tried to, especially in the Europa League games, has tried to introduce a slightly more cautious and slightly more possession based philosophy. He's come out on a few occasions saying that we can't just attack all the time because they're going to get caught out. And I think that's been a little bit of a broadside at perhaps more powerful voices within the whole Red Bull structure who demand that sort of football. Because it suits the brand and it suits the product and all the usual stuff that goes along with what Red Bull are. So I don't think it would be a huge surprise if he went. I wouldn't have found it surprising had Bayern Munich actually gone for him, because I think the sort of football that he wanted to play would have fitted them slightly better, and perhaps would fit someone at a team like Eintracht Frankfurt slightly better as well. When RB flew back from their Europa League game against Marseille, Hasenhüttl was allegedly met at Frankfurt Airport by Freddie Bobic and discussed whatever with him there. Bobic himself was asked this weekend, "What's the situation there? Has there been contact? Is he on your radar?" And he didn't confirm the rumours, but didn't deny them either. So absolutely nothing certain there. The personnel issues even go behind the scenes. There were sessions in Kicker last week that Thomas Tuchel wants to take the Hungarian assistant coach Zsolt Löw from RB Leipzig to PSG when that deal eventually goes through. There've been also suggestions that Ralf Rangnick isn't happy with the video analysis departments at Red Bull, which he had tasked with sorting out specifically the issue of conceding goals from set pieces, which he considers them not to have solved. And so he's levelled criticism at them.
I would say they're not solved either, by the way.
Yeah. Whether that's
I mean, considering
to video analysis, I don't know, but I can certainly imagine that it plays a role given it's a static situation. The video analysis should be preparing the team for how opposition teams line up their set pieces and set piece routines. There's also just in the same article in Kicker which suggested that the sports psychologist was also set to leave. There seem to be personnel issues going through the whole club at the moment. Be interested to see how it develops.
How do you think, basically, is there a chance, basically, that Leipzig could come back to earth next season in a very stark way?
Perhaps, yeah. They're going to be losing key players in Keita, in Forsberg, if they don't make the Champions League, which is highly unlikely now, will Timo Werner stay? He's got a contract until 2020.
Because we're talking about how top-heavy this team is. I mean, with Naby Keita basically, I mean, his on-field, off-field numbers, I mean, Leipzig are just a completely different team when he's in the side and when he's not. And with Timo Werner, they've become less dependent on him this year, but also they're not as their dependency on him last year was one of the reasons why they were so successful.
Well, looking at the spine of the team falling away, and perhaps also added to that the coach and various backroom staff. See how it develops. I wouldn't feel particularly sorry for them. There's enough money to throw at a new team.
That'll do it for this week's Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, and if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. You can find Matt Ford at Matt_4D, and I'm at Davis_VanOptor. Before we go, here is our stat of the week. Cologne confirmed their relegation this week after their loss in Freiburg. It is the sixth relegation in club history. Will they be able to pop straight back up? Thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you next week.